the season. And the time of the year that they must make money is now. Now they should fight this in the department. Remember when I said this is actually to make people poor? If this department contributes and makes people poor, then they're going to be dealt with in a very bad way. So I want to find out, what is the story of permits? Why can't we fix it? It can't be like that. If we decide suddenly that we're not going to pay salaries at the end of the month, we're going to wait and see if someone will sign the check, will the department be happy with that? Because that's basically what it is. Thank you, Jay. regards to achievement, the 2013 trophy is being listed in the executive summary of the annual report as an achievement. What about the previous minister's finding that the process was flawed and the end unlawful? And what about the SACLA court case to which the minister or staff did not even respond? I hear the DPG when he says that it is in the process of being negotiated between DAF and SACLA. And I would like to know if DAF is going to have to pay the costs of the court application, which I believe can be in the region of 5 million. Then I'd also like to know what the current status of the 2013 track process is. On the question of rights reallocation, I see no mention being made that DAF is ready for the reallocation that come up for renewal from February to sometime this year, next year. I'd like to know if they are ready, and if they're not ready, what are they going to do about those reallocations? A number of investigations have been undertaken and reports issued. I would like to know how long the forensic investigation into the procurement of goods and services for the... I can't see my own brain handwriting. The one I was dealing in. I think my eyes are older because I can see but not well either. As I said, I'd like to know how long the forensic investigation into the procurement of goods and services for the naming of but the forensic investigation, I would like to know when the report, you said, EDG, that the investigation is still in the process, and I would like an indication as to when the report can be expected. Then I'd also like to know why the public protector's report into an allegation of irregular awarding of a tender has not been tabled in this committee. Neither the Newton-Harris and Labatte report nor the report on the alleged conflict of interest in the appointment of a service provider has been tabled, and that report was released in September 2013. We don't even know what the findings were. Are we ever going to, is it going to be tabled, and are we going to be let into what the findings were? Now, as far as aquaculture and economic development is concerned, I'd like to follow up on Honourable Stay's question on aquaculture, but I'd like to know whether any research has been done or will be done on market resistance to freshwater fish. I also want to have access to a detailed report on the status of abalone ranching ventures, and would like to know how many abalone have been planted to date. On page 34 and 35, looking at the financial performance of the MLRS, it seems as if that raises roughly 120 million from industry. That represents only 27% of operational costs. Does it mean, and I think that it does, that the fund is no longer sustainable, and that it, like the SABC entities like the LABC, SAA, and ESCO, are increasingly reliant on taxpayers for bailouts, when it's supposed to be self-reliant. It also appears as if levies are not effectively collected. Despite serious underspending, there's a deficit if you look on page 34 of the report. And there's transfers of port costs to the value of something like 44 million rand. Maybe the DDG can tell us what these transport costs were for. And then I'd also like to know what a foreign exchange surplus of, I think it's 49,000 rand, certainly not 49 million rand, I'd like to know what that surplus is all about. And then on page 63, it is stated that the irregular spending now stands at 125 million rand. That's more than the income generated by the fund. Maybe the DG can comment on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. After that book, which I think covered all those not in the meeting today. Yes, I want to repeat because there are many of issues raised by Honorable Youngblood. Just DDG through Chair, we go to page 125 of the annual report. Where it says on procurement and contract management, I don't know if you understand. The 500,000 food and services with the transaction value below 500,000 were recorded without obtaining the required price quotation. If you can let us know how have you dealt with that problem. I'm not sure when I was going to put this, that issue to rest. It keeps on coming. When I was young, it was raised, I think there must be a way of putting it to rest so that we can focus on that. I think I should be talking about the kitchen, right? Location. In your presentation yesterday, you raised the issue of a joint operation between the department and the other department. Obviously, your colleagues and all that, in relation to the culture. You raised that, but I want to raise a question. It looks like there's too much of arrest. People who have committed a crime, that's a problem. Committed a crime, but where crime was committed, what was happening? So if you don't tie them, the schools so that people don't fish or poach, fish illegally and all that kind of thing. We read everything. People were arrested and all of that. But where were we before that happened? I think the trade is good. Thank you very much.
Two from me, DDG and DG. One, the inland fishing. I know that there was a traffic. Though there is no police, but I know that there was a traffic. What is it that is being done to get traffic to be implemented? And I know that there has been a challenge on the water rights issue. How far is it going to be? The previous parliament, I know the Minister of Water Affairs and the Minister of of Black Parents were working together when the issues of water rights for allowing the inland fishing sector in provinces that they don't have it. I just want to check how far the truth is, whether in Africa or they are challenged. The last one on the the implementation of small scale fishing, particularly in the coastal areas. I know that there are some calls that is before. What supposed to be and how do we manage the process such that we don't end up keeping the exclusion being meant to be a poaching. So how do we do that? Because we have met with the group of small scale fishermen that were complaining of the process that they are not taken on board. When we say we have arrested the poachers and all this, are we not referring to these people that were supposed to power in the coastal area and were not there? Yes, those are the two questions that I have for you.
Thank you. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Maybe it's obvious because of our work here, our ecosystem. There is a number of groups in coastal and inland. Formed co-ops to not those who have it, but those who could think. English is called those who shall celebrate. And they don't know what to do, and they don't have support. And I think because there are many people calling, they don't have assistance. It is necessary for us to revisit what we said earlier in the year. The knowledge is helpful. So that campaign we're talking about to educate people as to what they must do. Because that's the way of dealing with poverty in the country. So if you can quickly say, what can those people do? And all of that. I know in Zimbabwe we're told at some stage there are those small number, that's the vocabulary, English vocabulary. Those small co-ops, and that is across the country. And I think if you can say this is what we need to do and all of that. But the campaign to educate those people, divide the department, that's
the last one. The integration of fishery into the country, how far you're still an entity out of this country? When do you integrate it? Because it's now 5 years. And integrating, I mean that you'll have one resource that you can what is the punishment, do not have the other people in that country. The integration of the judiciary into the party. Thank you.
Sir, I much appreciate the number of questions from the members. It's very clear that the fisheries is an area that attracts a lot of interest. Of course, it's an area of high competition, but it is also a sector that is not as transformed as one that would, and one is not surprised that there will be quite a lot of conflict. But also because the wild caught fishery sector is a limited resource, and you have a lot of expectations that I'm sure we will not meet, and the bringing in of the aquaculture sector is to ensure that by 2030 the aquaculture developed provides support to supplement and close the gap of the declining ability of the wild caught fish to provide the supply. Honorable saying the issue of the transport permit, the was a problem, and I have been dealing with that, and when I actually thought I had resolved it on Wednesday, it just emerged again that indeed that bickering was going on. I have dealt with that letter as well this morning. Yes. You would have seen me last night when I was making calls. I was actually clearing the remaining cases. So we will give you feedback that is helpful. And I will go to the questions that Honorable Young would ask there. Firstly, just to say around the challenge that we had, the number of issues have been raised around the supply chain issues. The one is related to our own internal capacity, and we have taken measures amongst us, of course, who are to take a disciplinary action against the head of the unit, who subsequently resigned in the middle of that process. But some of the issues are issues that we are carrying on around the vessels, particularly in the, and this is also linked to the irregular expenditure in the way the short-term contracts were procured. And this has been quite a debate. It took quite some time between us and the AD in the way this matter should be handled. But we have followed the required provisions in terms of the deviation. But the AD believed we could have done much better in terms of the plan. It's something that we have followed those aspects. It was not necessarily all of it in our power. But the reason why on the vessels we ultimately are getting to where we're getting, and I know some people would be critical, we actually want to put to rest the issue of the regular expenditure, because we will still have that coming through in the 2014-15 annual report. And we had to put the issue of this short-term contract to rest. We have advertised a tender. We could not attract the right bidder who met the requirement. But rather than extend the short-term contract, and this is where we have gone into a partnership with the Department of Transport, and they will sponsor in the interim while we are re-advertising. They will take care of the vessel rather than extend the short-term contract up to the time when we have finalized the tender. And it's a double-edged sword in a sense, but we have decided we want to put to rest the possibility that we would have even in 15-16 an election expenditure by moving away from those tenders that the certain contract arranged towards mediation. The question around the viability of the funds, we believe that when we are generating revenue from the levies and all other collections that we're making, and we believe for now the fund is viable, and we have to say that the pressure that is coming is around the developmental policies, because the fund was meant to deal with the regulatory aspect. And in the absence of government being able to provide new money for developmental policies, and the developmental policies would include the small scale fisheries, the developmental policies would include aquaculture, development. Those aspects are development policies, are not necessarily regulatory aspects. On the vacancy, we have on our establishment 708 posts, 740 of them are filled, 68 are vacant. We're sitting at the vacant rate of 9.6. At the LMS level, with two chief director financial management and chief director research and development, which was completed now in August. All of those posts have been advertised. Director supply chain also has been advertised. And those are the same posts at the senior management level that are vacant at the moment. I've already spoken to the September contract. Yes, it is true that we are going to sign a service level agreement with SAMHSA for two purposes. One, to work with us on the tender, the long-term tender for the management of vessels, but secondly, the interim to assist us with both the management and the operation of the vessel. The Africana, yes, Africana is not ready, but it is the contract that we had with the service provider who is outgoing. There is an agreement. All the areas that we had already approved, we will go on to finalize, particularly around the engines, the two engines. And the indication, the time frame is given us at that stage, which is what would be revised and finalized with something now, but that by the end of the year it was expected that the Afghana would have been fixed. But we admit that also Afghana is old, and this aging problem keeps showing. They repair one area, they pick up a few other areas, but on the whole we expect it will be repaired, and we would provide at what cost that we will provide to the committee. Are the certification of the vessels in danger to the extent we are aware? Not. At the moment, they are safe with the current service provider. The condition of the research vessels, as I said, only Africana is out of operation. But as I indicated yesterday, but we, in the absence of Africana, we have a partnership with the industry so that the necessary surveys are done. We do contract other vessels within the industry so that we can continue to carry out our mandate. In terms of the understanding, I think two areas primarily. One will be in the research because of the Arcana, which we budgeted for, but also because of the working for fisheries, which is under aquaculture. In terms of the right allocation, 2013, the report has been done, and we have a future request that we will present to the committee on the health report. I believe that toward the end of this month we are prepared for that. But what the minister has done with the report, he has spread it to the state attorney and to the council to advise on the recommendations and flexibility of some of the recommendations. But in the meantime, we are preparing. Once we have a feedback, which we expect we will promise after quite some delay, we will have it before the end of the month. Several things that we will do. One will be to take a corrective action on the database. And once we have done that, then we will
the changes in the database, we will then implement them and address some of the corrective measures in the appeal. One of the recommendations and the observations, well, let me say the observations according to Heaven, is that you need a time lag or a lead time of about 18 months to prepare for the right allocation. And his observation is that we could have worked under quite some pressure to implement certain taking, and in that situation, one would have expected that this mistake or this inaccuracy would have seen the process. But one should also appreciate that part of the problem, of course, is the fact that the government has committed to transform the sector. And the small-scale fishery will have to get an allocation from the existing allocation. Therefore, in that reduction of the commercial price that would have to be allocated to the small-scale fishery, the changes in terms of the transformation, it is expected that it will be unhappy. We are dealing with a finite resource that in some cases is being exposed to depletion in some areas, and therefore it is not unexpected that this unhappiness will happen. But we are prepared to take the corrective measures, both in terms of those errors that we have been from our side, but also deal with the challenges of the fact that we have only a limited resource. In terms of the investigations and the tests before, let me backtrack. The right allocation through that there will be in 2015 nine sectors will be firing from February up to December. And I believe the minister will make an announcement on that now. Chair requests that I do not address that now, but rather for the Office of the Minister responsible. In terms of the investigation, the forensic investigation is to be the hub. And the last time I spoke to them, they said it was still work in progress, purely because they are also dealing not only with DAF, but they are dealing with DAF and PRC, this investigation. And we are also waiting to get the outcome of it. In terms of the public protector's report on the matter, the recommendation to make, we have actually followed them in terms of the tender process that she advised that we involve the national trade, and the previous tender that we have decided is not yet to finalize. We have taken trade all along that whole process. The SATLA, yes, the SATLA is the negotiation between the Chinese attorney and the attorney of SATLA is going on in terms of what who will bear which cost. And that has not been made clear, and we believe the state attorney will advise us at that point. Are we undertaking research on agriculture? Yes, we do. As indicated, we have a memorandum of understanding with about nine universities. Among those, aquaculture is one of the sectors that is affected by those memorandums. The detailed report on abalone ranging show that we would rather provide a written report to the committee. There was a question around the viability of our revenue streams. The reality is that the tariffs have not been revised for a while, but we believe that before we do that, we should fix the problems that we have. We do not want to just collect revenue from the industry that may not necessarily be a new entity. we are taking further corrective action before we discuss. We are putting up a plan for revision of the tariffs, which have been reversed for a long time. You have a big companies that are only paying in transit, only have to pay their rent because there has been no differentiation. But we would want to improve on the collections of the fines. Particularly, we don't necessarily have a problem with the collection of the levy, but our bigger problem is the collection of the fines, because that we do through the Department of Justice, and we're looking at methods not only of collection, but also of fetching the fines that we have this required. I am going to leave the other two questions on the transport cost to the Chief Financial Officer. I have already addressed the issue of the procurement act. We are strengthening our internal controls around the supply chain management, because that is the area where we have had the weaknesses. In terms of the joint operations, I would want to indicate that the illegal unreported unregulated activity is a worldwide problem, and the committee would know. We will be presenting, I believe, next week the request for accession on the port state measures, because it's intended to deal with the problem of illegal activity. This is a worldwide problem, and it's a major problem and a threat to the state of fisheries the world over. So the question whether we are taking measures to prevent, yes, we're doing the best we can in collaborating with all other law enforcement agencies, both national and international. And we believe we are doing relatively better. We have a number of countries, including the United States, wanting to us to share our lessons with them. So I would want to say very confidently, we are not doing very bad in this area. But the part of the problem also is that when you have a sector where there's high competition, there's less transformation. These illegal activities will always find their way into the system. Also, when you have the communities, that coastal communities, that are not benefiting from the resource, and there is a lot of poverty. Some of the problems that we have to deal with are general social problems in the society. Unfortunately, they would be realized in fishery. But we are putting in measures using our integrated fishery security strategy to ensure that we do not only do the arrest, but we prevent this from happening. But we do that within the limits of the resources that we have, because we're talking of a coastline of 3,000 kilometers that we have to contain. This is Chair, on the inland fisheries, I would want to indicate that we are developing, we have a plan, we have started working on the inland fisheries policy, and that we will do, considering the fact that there are two other departments that at the moment are regulating on aspects that affect the inland fisheries, the Department of Environmental Affairs and the Department of Water Affairs. In terms of the discussions around the water rights issues, I think this discussion is going on because particularly that agriculture has an even bigger interest in this. Not only the allocations, the tariffs, and probably the pricing of water. In terms of the implementation of the small-scale fisheries, here we are finalizing, working on the regulations, but at the same time, we will be working on the identification and the verification of both the fisher communities and the individual fishers within those communities. And when that is done, we will register the cooperative to whom, which will be the legal entity that will receive the allocation of the rights, the right holder. But at the same time, we must indicate that not everybody ultimately would be accommodated. You have a finite resource, a contested resource. And therefore, part of the strengthening and the revisiting the operation of the fishing harbor is to ensure that for those who may not necessarily be involved directly in harvesting fish, are alternative livelihoods in the harbor, in the fishing harbor, will benefit them. I mean, there was a question of who gets arrested. Well, it's a big fact. But I must indicate that beyond what people would expect, people are being arrested largely in Avalon are not poor people. Even in cases where poor people are arrested, poor people are being used by very, very capable and very well-off people. So it is quite an expect. We, in terms of agriculture, we are under our practice, and we did a presentation this week on the aquaculture development zones to the sending the select committee on land and minerals. We are establishing the aquaculture development zones, which will mean a bigger area which will bring in more potential operators in one area. But yes, we are also supporting the small cooperatives through the provincial department. And that would, the support would include assisting them in terms of the training, assisting them in getting the necessary authorization that they require in collaboration with the other departments, but also ensuring that they are assisted to be able to access funding by making sure that they meet the requirements for whichever their funding authority is. I believe the integration of the branch into the department, the accounting authority will speak to that. What can we do with the education?
Thank you, DDG. Honorable members, so your question was relating to the traveling cost increase of 0.4 million and foreign gain realized on settlement from access of 9,000 rand. As I indicated yesterday, we were just presenting a statement of financial position and some performance. And also indicated in note 23.4.3 of the audited financial statements, the largest contributors to the increase was the implementation of the district of the PRAC 2013, where SAR basically traveled for 6 weeks, distributing application forms and 2 weeks of collection. Well, that there was hiring of vehicles and accommodation that we incurred expenditure, and also we all know that the cost of pickerel was quite volatile last year, and that was also the contributing factor. As I indicated, that more land-based inspections were done, not only by the compliance unit, but also fisher pictorial vessel staff. All the vessels who were unable to sail, they resorted to doing land-based surveillance, and that they actually hired vehicles from GMC, and that contributed to the increase in traveling costs. In terms of the foreign gain, not all procurement of the MLRS is done locally. There are certain services we have to procure from overseas, and just three of the top ones would be the licensing and the monthly services on the satellite service for our vessel monitoring system that is used both by MRN as well as monitoring units within monitoring compliance and surveillance, and the other would be in terms of research tags used in the West Coast rock lobster. The researchers, they tag the rock lobsters for the research purposes, and that's the provider in Australia. And the other would be the license in terms of scientific software used by the research department. The other also overseas. basically what happens is the 49,000 rand is the net saving that we realize on invoicing, the difference between the rate of exchange on invoice rate and the rate of exchange when we pay the invoice. Basically, we realize before better a payment rate than an invoice rate, and we able to realize the saving of 49,000 rand.
The work to integrate fisheries syndicate takes a little bit longer still. It will require, for example, a further review of the Marine Living Resources Bill, because it's all provided for in the statute. But at the practical level, this is one area on integration and organizational design and development where we felt we needed external support. Because while we have thought and we've done some few adjustments about who reports to whom and to reduce the duplication where that is possible, like for example the fisheries international relations person reporting to the DDG or being doing his work under oversight of the DDG responsible for international relations, so that has one umbrella. And we have concluded third evaluation for that service provider, and the bill adjudication is probably happening in the next week or so. And I think it's one of those areas where you ultimately need the support of an external person, because if you have to change people's lives and job descriptions, it's often those things are guided by self control, our own interest, etc. So at least at the technical level or organizational level, we will have better integration by the end of the year. But in terms of delisting the error, the entity, I think that might the legal, more formal process might take a little bit of time on that. There's a commitment to do that.
Thank you. We will appreciate if the process can move very fast. Because from 2009, the time is gone. Now we're entering the 7th. We believe we can do it much faster than what you're doing. So we'll continue to engage on it as we get feedback on your performance. But just to be clear that it didn't go beyond another 3 years. Honorable
Prince? Christian, I missed something, and that's the problem. We become accustomed that the minister or the minister is here. We didn't even ask this morning because, you know, this fisheries branch is really chaotic. And we need answers from the minister. But basically, the DCG was not supposed to answer me on that thing of why. He's supposed to implement it. I want to ask the minister, why is it going? Now the DCG must say he's busy sorting it out. That's the problem, Chair. You know, we cannot ask the question to the person what's responsible for it. No, that's fine. We can solve it. The problem is the minister is not here and the deputy is not here, and we didn't know why. Because they are still responsible for the people that come and represent the department here today. So if we can just get a clarity on that, please, and I'm very happy to see the DC, and maybe that's why it slipped my mind ministers are here. They're supposed to be here and come and report plus chair. And then just lastly on that, part of that is the whole story of the boats and the thing. It's a repeat for the last 5 years, as you said, not good enough.
Can we get the response?
Honorable Chen and honorable members, World Food Day took place in the Sina, which I haven't been there, but I understand it's far north Limpopo, near the Limpopo River, which was 2 kilometers from the, what's it called again? Bakebridge border gate. And so my minister and deputy minister and my colleagues that needed to drive all the way back from there and got back quite late last time. The minister is at addressing an AGSA conference today. I was also supposed to be there. And here we appreciate that Parliament takes precedence, but we also, I think this committee also expects the minister to be having good, we're not going to grow agriculture and achieve our mandate, we don't do it in partnership with the sector. The minister is there this morning. I had to send an apology to the president of AGSA. I see the CEO of ARC is also supposed to be there. So that is where the minister is. The deputy minister is not available today. The deputy minister also had another program that the deputy minister could not cancel. So I'm formally pending the apology of the minister and the deputy minister. And I'm standing in for the executive authority at the accounting authority of the department.
Thank you, Christine. My apologies for not accepting. Can we discuss it? We thank you, Christine. We now can be released. I'm going to go to the office of the next time when you come back. For the portfolio, that things were not sorted out. Maybe the communication happened, but the people are still without limits. The guys which are dying, they're losing the income, and yeah. So, but I'll follow it up in the next hour. Okay. I was saying your list is here and the can we now invite the ARC? We have 3 presentations. And as we are going to allow all the presentations to flow, and then later have questions for all of them. We'll start with the ARC. We are going to refer that we know your vision, your vision and your board of directors, your businesses and so on. Please go into the target. The resource has been left for the day. I know that usually the chair today would want to introduce a please chair. 1 minute will be enough for that because you must be in the meeting, you know. And then you can then hand over to your CEO. And the same thing will happen to other 3 presentations. We just need your achievements. The non-achievement, why you have not done that, if APS raised issues, what is the plan to implement them, and does it. Can we start, is this the chat? Yes.
So thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning, Honorable Members. given the mandate, we'll refrain from taking up too much of your time and move almost directly into inviting the CEO to both introduce his delegation and to share the presentation. Just very briefly, I did want to introduce two members of council that we've asked to join us. Professor Sibusiso Vilenkomo, who is the Deputy Chair of Council, Prof, if you can just stand. Professor Vilenkomo is a development economist attached to the University of Pretoria Management, and is Deputy Chair of Council and oversees both our Finance and Investment Committee and the Audit and Risk Committee. Thank you, Prof. And then we have Professor Michael Khan, who's also a member of the Executive of Council. Professor Khan has a background in theoretical physics or mathematical physics. He's a professor extraordinaire at the University of Stellenbosch and an international expert in science for science technology quality. Professor Khan chairs our Research and Development Committee on Council. He consults very widely internationally in that field. Just very briefly to say that the year on which we are reporting this morning was the final year of the tenure of the previous council, whose tenure came to an end at the end of that year, and was in fact the second year of the implementation of our five-year strategic plan as council, the details of which have been shared with you before, so I'm not going to go into that. Just to say it's a year in which we continue to consolidate the focus of our work around the programs we have adopted. We continue to consolidate sound financial management. We achieved our seventh consecutive clean audit report, and our audit findings continue to improve year on year. So we're very proud of that achievement in the organization. And we've also, in the year under review, focused on growing our research capacity through the recruitment and engagement of many more doctoral and postdoctoral fellows in order to try and increase the intellectual capacity within the organization. Maybe I should just leave it there for the moment and invite our CEO, Dr. Shedrack Mupuri, to introduce the management delegation and to present an overview of the report. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thanks, for what you do.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the Chair Council and the other council members on here with us. I have on my left the Chief Financial Officer, Katura Maduleta, who raised his hand, so he's coming over here. And then I also have next to him Ms. Mahamu Umlau, who is responsible for our HR. And I have Dr. Mame Tina, who is responsible for research and development in the COPS region. And I have Dr. Jasper Lee, who is a research and reporter for Research and Innovation Systems Technology Platform. And we have our acting company secretary, Mr. Ayanda Ndamate. And then we have Dr. Lisa Magina, who is responsible for economic and capacity services. And we have Dr. Andrew Magajana, who is responsible for livestock, both production and livestock disease methods. And we have Mr. Franz Munkwes, who is responsible for our IT and infrastructure area. If I could have the next slide, let me start here to just remind the committee that we are trying to answer, so we have to respond to expectations and outline the terms of our mandate within the National Institute of Innovation, as outlined by the Cabinet from the Department of Science and Technology. And we have to try and find a way in which we translate these into how they can be applied in work culture so that we provide the kind of solutions that are expected to be by work culture. And that, in a sense, gives us a sense of a kind of indicators of performance that one would expect in terms of taking impact in the sector. The next slide, please. We've outlined to you previously the strategic goals of the
of the ALC, I won't go through that for now, because we can ask you another week, next week. And these are programs to which we will be putting to in terms of our deliverables. The next slide, please. And that's just all the linkage between the goals and the program. The next slide, please. I think in summary, if I were to be honest, we have so far what we can summarize it. Really, we've actually, our view is that it's successfully developed in terms of our business plan, as a plan in terms of our business plan, as well in terms of what our clients are successful. We've contributed largely towards the competitiveness and the growth and the stability of the sector, and, you know, in terms of the deliverables that we've delivered out there. We provided scientific support towards disease management and decision making, both in terms of policy and in terms of regulatory decisions that are taken by others, including government. We have fairly good employee relations within the organization, and that is also reflected by our project organizational performance. We have very low turnover, less than 5% in the organization, and fairly low levels of therefore work for disruption have not really been happening. We haven't had any strike in the ARP in the last 8 years. We believe that we are managing the resources of the organization very well, and I think that's reflected in the outcome of the audit of the Auditor General. In the reporting period, we've also been able to increase our external revenue. So in summary, Chair and members, we would simply say we believe that the ARP is delivering the expectations. Next slide, please. I think this is an important slide because it talks to what the scientists have been doing and their capability to generate a kind of scientific information. And as you can see, we've continued to improve. We've doubled in the last 6 years the number of scientific publications. But not only the number, but also the quality of the publications. Which can talk to the usefulness of the information that, that is published as a peer-reviewed journal article. In the year that we're talking about, we were able to release at least 30 new cultivars, crop cultivars, that talk to improvement in yield. And mitigating the effects of pests and diseases. So that is a significant contribution to the agriculture sector. The next slide, please. In terms of the problem on livestock, I reported to you last year on the program that we're running, particularly focused on enabling black smallholder farmers to systematically improve their livestock. We've gone from around 1,000, and last year we reported a success of about 4,000, and I could say that we actually have, in the year that we're reporting, managed to get more than 6,000 participants in this particular program, effectively meaning that we have data around the performance and the breeding program of more than 90,000 farmers that have smallholder farms and communal areas and so on. But the key thing is that many of these farmers are beginning to find that their ability to access the market has increased almost fourfold. Farmers reported income, that their incomes have doubled, and that they're facing higher prices for their animals. And we believe that this is largely because of the slow linkage between the scientific data analysis that we generate from the samples that we collect and the information that we collect from the farmers and the use of that information would then lead to better management and improvement in their animals. So we believe that this particular program is having an impact. If I were to stretch a little bit and say, if we were to deliver this at the scale, the national scale at which we are trying to reach everybody, we probably would need to reach somewhere in the order of close to 500,000 animals. And unfortunately, we just don't have that kind of budget to be able to reach that many farmers and animals. We've also been providing linking, the kind of other group of programs with the breeding services, particularly in terms of artificial animal reproductive technology. We trained in the year that we brought in at least 900 farmers. I know we trained a bit more than that. In the Popo, KwaZulu-Natal, Mpumalanga, Northwest, and Eastern Cape, on artificial insemination and so on, as well as health in terms of simple cancer. Our success rate is around 80% in terms of artificial insemination, which we believe is helping accelerate the breeding of animals out there, so that the farmers have good quality animals and contributing towards the genetics of livestock among the poor farmers. The next slide, please. Within the context of health, we've been involved in a very large project in collaboration with the Department of Agriculture staff around trying to understand the effects that have an impact on diseases, but also being able to produce the kind of information that would enable decision makers to predict the likelihood of outbreak in different parts of South Africa. So one of those kind of projects was about the mapping of risk policies and outbreaks. We know that the outbreaks have occurred between 2008 and 2011. We were able to identify a high-risk zone, a buffer zone and a surveillance zone in the three states. And I think this is useful information, particularly for vaccination and for being able to manage this particular disease. We've also been busy with developing a new vaccine, and one of those is the vaccine against water, which is an important issue for sheep, particularly a goat. And we continue to do our work developing the vaccine for FMD in order to try and reduce a lot of the livestock effect. Additional information is requested we will provide that. The next slide, please. On natural resources, last year we had an international conference on climate change, climate smart agriculture. Well engaged with both scientists and policy makers and all interested stakeholders on the issue of climate change and how they affect on agriculture and how to explore developing solutions to enable agriculture to be resilient to the impact of climate change. We were able to also look at a variety of scenarios for projections, which is a study that we did on behalf of the department to try and determine cancers of next to a potential seed production of potential crops and a variety of organic scenarios, particularly around them. Soybean, sorghum, sunflower, potato, and cereals. We noted that one of the predictions is that there are too much change in terms of the next slide. This slide just sort of shows the kind of data that we were able to generate. The dark green simply shows the optimal areas around which the home. And the light green is still suitable and fairly optimal. And the brown is marginal. And the white basically starts to tell you that you have a large section of the home that is almost not suitable for producing this particular crop. under natural conditions being very bad and the children being very bad.
Sorry, do you own
this
land that you
have seen? Yes. The water is not very much in the place. So, okay. I'll follow that. If it was there, probably couldn't come, couldn't go through the image. I apologize. We will leave it to the next slide, please. This is the next program, our mechanization, where we looked at what are the ways to work up innovation trials and have a talk to try and remove the pollutants so that we'll be able to try and recirculate the reuse of water systems and show that this can be beneficial for one farmer, but also for sustainability and the natural climate also. Next question. For nano processing, we've done some work on honey bush and sea orchard. We were successfully released the first input seed to the Caribbean honey bush tea association at their AGM. In July 2018, we've been able to then donate about 1.5 kilograms of input seed the community project, where at least 10 hectares were then established and sold somewhere in the order of 10 kilograms of seed to farmers. We could potentially establish more than 100 hectares. For the area that, for example, we should be easily doubled. We believe that we should possibly be able to a harvesting of plus minus 5 times the hectare. I think it looks like the presentation that was sent to you is an older presentation. Because I sent it. This is essentially.
When did you send it?
This is the presentation, this is the last year presentation.
Last year?
Yes, the one that you bought is the last one. I'm looking at the list of four members on it.
Okay.
And then so okay, not correct. So, yes, it is correct. Oh, I'm told that it's just a few slides missing.
Okay.
Can I suggest that we allow them to continue with the presentation, but immediately after the presentation, the arrangement must be made for the outstanding copies of the presentation, etc.
So, let me
just
for a moment. Marcella, let me just for a moment, if they change the CEO. If this CEO will change the presentation and they apply just enough part of what we can to us, tell us so that we look at that. Well, it can be true that that's the example of patience, etc. Something.
Chair and honourable members, I apologize for the gaps or errors to some of the slides. I will show you the slides that where they will change it. We haven't changed it. Other than that, we haven't changed it so far. The slides where they've been changed is that sort of, we only just added, actually, not changed, largely because we thought it would be much more useful for me to go to finance presentation. Okay, that's we'll show you that. Next slide, please. In this particular slide, what we're referring to is largely where we're trying to demonstrate the work of the ARC around translating the results of research into the commercialization and commercializing the economic and data technologies, but also trying to assist in the development of SMEs, and also trying to generate some economic analysis around the impact of some of these particular SMEs and then some of these technologies for agriculture, on the farmers and so on, the mechanisms around the money power, the intellectual assets. If there are questions on this, I will be able to answer those questions. Next slide, please. The ARC, as I indicated earlier, is also involved around a training of a farmer. We collaborated in the year under the reporting with the provincial department of agriculture, with the NSA, with the Commissioner for Product Export Control for TPECD, around training of farmers in different aspects. In the year that we're talking to, we trained at least 12,000 smallholder farmers in a number of different areas, but I'm also largely around mechanization, irrigation, responsible use of pesticides and pest and risk control, animal production, and animal health. Specific training that was conducted by ARC professionals, but also in collaboration with all of those entities that we mentioned. We've also started to establish some kind of technology-driven and scientific-driven plant health type of service, where we could be able to provide expert advice or farmers to enable them in terms of diagnosis of plant and pest diseases. And we've also trained some extensions because to be able to run plant units so that they could provide proper expert advice and skills development and pest management, especially for smallholder farmers. Grain farmers were trained, particularly in the Eastern Northwest, and Cape Town, in the production of maize, soybean, sunflower, and groundnut. The slide just schematic showing both the numbers according to the different provinces that we were able to store the farmers. Next slide, please. We believe that the ARC is getting a fairly high return in terms of research and investment in the research. We believe that the second benefit of the work arriving from the daily program, not only from the initiatives as well, that we see the agriculture development around conservation agriculture, biocontrol, and other crops fairly positive. We conducted an economic study, for example, that revealed that the ARC breeding program showed a direct monetary benefit to the customer of about 3.5 billion between 1970 and 2008. This is a research study that we've just conducted. We have also noted that the project on hybrid crops that we implemented in the OR campus district, that the relative value of that particular project is somewhere in the order of about 15 million rand. These are estimates that we believe the sector. If I could then go to the next slide. We've engaged with a whole host of stakeholders in the year that we reported. We just highlighted a few there. I mentioned that we hosted the international forum content in December on climate smart agriculture. That has since now resulted in a global climate smart agriculture alliance that was established at the United Nations in September. We're heads of state for different countries around the world, and we gave us a challenge onto the founders of different arising from the Ocean Kind Initiative. On an annual basis, we do run the Diadoni Agricultural Expo at our facility in Stellenbosch. And we recognize the participation and we're trying to encourage farmers to learn from each other. On an annual basis, we run the AFC and an improvement award. And we also participate in a whole host of divisions. Some are hosted run by the provinces. But we also participated from the station in the International Norman Pollock World Prize Expo, which was held in Iowa in the USA. Norman Pollock was a Nobel Prize winner around the Green Revolution. We also participated in the Forum for Agricultural Research in Africa Science Week, which was held in Ghana, in the previous day. What we're finding is that they keep going to these kinds of activities. The documents and the brochures that used to be there found rather fast. We actually don't have enough to be able to keep the information and the information that we get and learn from others. Next slide, please. I will just ask my relative for human resources, Ms. Umlau, to talk to this particular slide on HR matter.
That we have in front of us, the
is the summary of the financial performance of the Agricultural Research Council. If you go to the slides that we provided, I'm basically going into the same slide. First one was just a comparison of year on year. You can go back here. And the second slide compares both year on year as well as the performance against the budget, the business plan. So the first column on the left basically says 2015 actual shows the performance of last year, and then 2014 actual is the performance of the year under review, and then 2014 budget is the business plan. You will note that in terms of the revenue, which is comprised of the parliamentary grant and external income, there has been growth in terms of parliamentary grants that we got between 2013 and 2014. The significant increase came from the application for the economic competitiveness support program. The one of note, I think, in this particular slide, that we have had quite an extensive increase in personal income from 733 million to 466, which represents a 40% increase between 2 years. And in terms of comparing to the business plan, we had also planned to have about 35 million of external income. We ended up with 466 of external income, so which was a good performance. But you will note that also under the expenses, that the increase in external income also drove up some costs. Under operating costs, we had to spend about 405 in terms of business plan. We ended up with 491. That it correlates with your basically your increase in external income. If you look at the 2014, the performance there, if you end up with what we say is a surplus of 156 million rand, let me highlight that the 156 million is not basically the cash that does not represent understanding in any way. It's just an accounting issue because your revenue includes capex of about 25 million. So your capex flows through the income statement, but the expenditure doesn't flow through the income statement, flows through the balance sheet. And also included in the economic competitiveness support program, it's got a component of capex in there. So that also doesn't flow through the income statement, it flows through the balance sheet. So that creates that anomaly. And also, under our external income, you have some of the clients funded capex that was close to your revenue, but you will see the impact on the short business when you have the exchange or so. I just thought that you can highlight that cost, because it's quite important, but the one should not be treated as cash in the bank that you have not spent. The next slide basically shows you the trend in terms of revenue. That shows that between 2010 and basically 2014, our financial grant grew from 5.6 million. And during the same period, the external income grew from 2.93 to about 4.6 million. We go to the next slide, about revenue. We highlight the proportion of your financial grant to your external income in terms of funding the ERC. Between the 2 years, the external income should move from 60% to 34% of the total funding. The following slide also gives you it was not in the original slide that was submitted, but we thought we should just bring it in. We amended the slide so that we don't just end up in 2014, but show you the projection going forward. In the light of the recent announcements regarding the adjustment of parliamentary grants, the cut. So if you can look at between 2010 and 2014, you will realize that there was quite as I highlighted initially, that there was quite a significant growth in parliamentary grants from 434 to 627 in your baseline operational grant. And then we also received the economic support packages in 2015 and 2014, and the projections for 2015 that we're going to be sort of at our peak. The allocation for economic support package was about 1.1, and so it's quite a significant growth between 2015 and 2015. But then what we've done is we received a letter notifying us of the adjustment in terms of the allocations for the 2016 and 2017. So we set up this issue into the projection here just to show the impact that we're going to have going forward. So basically the impact shows that you're going to drop in terms of your parliamentary grant allocation from 2016 down to 2017, from 16 to 15 to about 6,000. And while your allocation from DST is growing, and your CAPEX maintains, and the growth is being maintained. So the drop in your operational parliamentary grant has some impact in terms of the operations going forward. The next slide, that's just to break down basically, it's just a breakdown of your revenue, your sell income basically. There's a bit of a type out there, but it just shows you the breakdown of the proportions of your income, your external income. And if you go to the next slide, it's basically the trend in terms of your operating expenditure. As you can see, between 2010 and 2014, your personnel cost has grown from 496.85. Mainly driven by your growth also in external income and your growth in capacity within your organization. And at the same time, your other operating costs also move from 2021. The next slide it shows you the cash flow over the period from 2010 to 2014. The two bars basically show your net cash flow from operating costs. Which was achieved around about 2012 and then went down to 2009. But also you can see the level of capital expenditure in rate that between 2012 and 2014 we've been spending quite a bit in terms of CAPEX within the organization from about 91 million to 1.5. And your level of cash, we ended up with a cash balance of 4.8, which I'll explain in a moment. If you go to the next slide, which was not in the original presentation, but we thought it was important to have. What it shows, ladies and gentlemen, that the from about 2009, we were sitting with a cash deficit within ARC of about 150 million. And at that time, I remember when we spoke to Treasury, we highlighted the problem to Treasury, and all we were told was that we need to manage your finances. We are not injecting cash into the ARC. And if we've done over the year, you've reduced the cash deficit from 150 million, and then this is for the first time in the growth of, I think, over 7 years, we've just, achieved sort of breaking point in terms of the cash situation in the ARC. So we can say that we are getting from the ARC. So our balance sheet has become healthy now because it was. If you look at the balance sheet over the years, we were technically as an entity. So we just got to the point where we can say we sorted out the issue of the cash situation within the ARC. Now, in terms of, if you go to the next slide, which was also not in the original presentation, but we thought we should highlight, there is a balance of about 4H in the balance at the end of the year. In March 2014. What I need to highlight here, Chairperson, is that the cash that is sitting there is not cash unused, it's not cash. It's not a cash there that you can supplement with the other title. You're sitting with money that is actually committed. What you have here is that you've got a cash of 480, and if you add what we should be able to collect from our debtors of 1 to 2, takes you to about a potential case of about 2. But again, you've got commitment in your balance sheet. So that soon after the financial year, you get commitment to the case of the case of the one of the biggest things that we have, that is in the case our allocation for the SMG, which was complete. But we also have, in the way we do our business, that we do ask for prepayments from clients to say, because we don't have a balance sheet to fund projects that significant much besides this, but we ask for the clients to pay upfront for some of the projects. So at the end of the year, we're sitting with about, in the 27 there that you have some of the money that you've received from clients for projects that you have to complete. And also at the end of the year, you're sitting with services that you have received that you still have to pay for at the end of the year. So there's a whole lot of, so if you take out all those commitments out of the test day, you basically need about 2 hours. So it is not a question of that, that the real the time in the bank, but you have to look at the concomitant commitment that are linked to the particular test. So at the end of the day, it's not the ARC is not sitting on some unutilized cash, so it's all committed to the from the move to the next slide. This just a slide that this slide basically shows the level of expenditure over the period of 2005-2014 against your baseline operational CD, which is a solid line that goes there. You will see that by the end of the 2015, we'll be at the highest in terms of the level of personnel costs and also our operating costs, mainly because we did receive some involuntary grants. So if you factor in the proposed adjustment in terms of the parliamentary grants for the next 2 years, it takes you back to the situation where basically your parliamentary grant, operational parliamentary grant, does not cover the salary bill of the we're going to have to find a way to do that going forward.
Thank you very much. We are now going to work under the work biological program and followed by the South African veterinary country. Please, you've got your friend's entity has taken an hour and 20 minutes. So we are left with only 15 minutes for both of you. So you have to be very smart and I don't know, you have to come up with a vision.
I just want to check that the same presentation that we sent earlier on in the standard that I'm sticking to that. Thank you, Chair. Dr. Steve Collins, I'm the CEO.
Before you proceed, we're not going to have a process of asking questions. We members are writing questions, we'll be coming to you directly. So you can even help respond in the interest of time.
Thank you very much. Dr. Steve Cornelius, I'm the CEO of the National Presentation. And this is the outline, and many of those details there will fit. Can you have the next slide? The second part, the financial performance. Our Chief Financial Officer will present that. Our delegation, unfortunately, our Chair of the Board, as you know, is a medical doctor. He had an emergency this morning, so he could not make it, and he has said I'm not stable in pathology. With me, I have Mr. Galola, our Chief Financial Officer, and also Mr. Morgan, who is our General Manager, Legal Compliance, and also the Company Secretary. Next slide. Just one or two things to highlight. Previously, OBP was a government department, and both in 1968, but in the year 2000, it became a company, 3D company. And since then, we've been operating basically on our own income. We don't get any support from government, parliamentary grant, or anything like that. Next slide. Mission mandate, we'll skip that. That's our workforce. Quite a small company, 176 total personnel, of which 46% female and 86% black. Next slide. Our governance, as I said, we are a state-owned company. We are 3B entity. And the only money we've received so far from government is around about 2001, 9 million rand. And that 9 million was for a small MO facility. And about a year ago, we were given some infrastructure money to upgrade the facility
496 million over 3 year period. But to fund our operations, we sell vaccines, and from those vaccines, we pay salaries, we pay water rights, we do all the kind of things. Next slide. We have three subcommittees, and that's the board of directors, the organ list, which is the executive subcommittee and IT, BAMCO, HR and ethics, and we also have now R&D, sales and marketing. And we meet at least 4 times a year. Next slide. That's the new board directors. We did introduce them when we presented the corporate planning for this year. We have on our board a veterinarian, a medical doctor, 2 PhDs, two veterinarians, and 2 legal people. Thank you very much. That's the structure. Basically, the board directors reporting to the minister. I report to the board of directors. And then I have next layer of senior executive managers who basically deal with all the operations and support services. Next slide. That's our team. We've met them previously. Next slide. In our performance report, and I must say at the onset, if you look at our AG signs, you'll notice that from the financial perspective, we've got an unqualified audit, and also there are no issues with our finances. Where we do have some concern, which AG has said, was to relate to our performance information, and that we have put in place a corrective process, because previously we had, during this financial year, 112 to 14 different targets. And many of them, the AG said, are very operational targets, so it wasn't necessary to have that. So we need to put more strategic targets, and which we have done, and which we presented to you at the beginning of the year, in the corporate plan. We reduced those to 28 strategic targets. And many of the targets that we previously put in are now incorporated into the business planning of the different sections in the business. So we have basically 5 strategic goals: to build a successful high-performance organization, to improve business processes and management practices, to build a profitable and sustainable company, to facilitate job creation through indirect supporting our clients and directly creating subsidiary joint ventures, incubating, accelerating and forming of new business entities. And this one contributes to government priorities with respect to food security and economic growth. Next slide. So we've basically unpacked each one of these strategic goals, and there are some objectives, and also there's a baseline statement, and it also provides a justification why we actually chose those particular goals. Next slide. So we'll skip these ones, and we'll come to a summary of what we've done. Next slide. The summary is at the end of the financial, so I'm going to hand over to the Chief Financial Officer at this point, Mr. Gore.
Thank you, Mr. CEO, the chairman, honorable members, and colleagues. In summary, this is the financial comprehensive income for owners of the poor financial products. During the 2013-14 financial year, the performance is as follows: 87 million rand from the sale of vaccine. The gross margin being 55 million rand of that. In terms of the expenditure, we are sitting at 90 million rand, which is more or less the same as last year. The reason for that is because of the revenue which is struggling to come through due to the state of our equipment or the process which we are busy doing overseas, trying to recapitalize the environment. We are trying to control the cost because we are finding more of our expenditure from the revenue we generate from the sales of our sales. And then during the year under review, we are taking with 7 million rand for operating loss. That is before the investment income and the government, the amortization of the government fund. The 6.4 million rand is the interest received on the positive cash balances which we have in our bank accounts, and majority of that cash comes from the national treasury for the recapitalization of OBP. And then the next one being the grant which we have received, which we are amortizing to match the expenditure during the course of the year. And then the gross before profit was sitting at 30 million rand, and after profit was sitting at 8.5. Next slide, please. This is the financial position. From the balance sheet point of view, the previous slide is showing you the weaker performance which we have experienced in OBP. Our income statement is very weak, but our balance sheet is very strong. We are sitting the assets of 309 million rand in our balance sheet, majority of that being 156 million rand worth of cash, which have maintained from treasury point of view, and also the reserve, the cash which we should be generating before we started experiencing what we have mentioned earlier on. And then the other one in our property plant equipment is 109 million rand. And going down, we're sitting at 140 million rand reserve, and also 133 million rand tax income. The tax income is as a result of three factors. The first one is the fund which we have received from TIA for the funding of our research program, and also the government grant relating to the corporatization of area, I mean, capitalization of OBP. Next slide. This gives us the cash flow statement. In terms of the cash generated or utilized from operations, you can see the business was unable to fund itself to the tune of 21 million rand, which means that 21 million rand was funded out of the cash reserve which we have. And then during the year under review, we bought we sent the cash flow out in terms of recapitalization, 3 million rand worth of assets. And then going down in terms of the investing activities, the 96.5 million rand which we have received during the year for recapitalization. And then after the year end, we're seeing 150 million rand to a year of the Northern account. Thank you.
Thank you, Skipper. We can get to the next slide. So we're going to speak about the summary of the performance. Previous slide. Good slide. Thank you very much. I think, first of all, because there might be concerns, and we speak about that at the time we present the corporate plan, the availability of vaccine, and just before I give the highlight of the performance information, I just want to report to the committee, since July, we've been working extremely diligently to correct some of the production process problems we had. In addition to that, we've gotten some experts from outside, consultants who are helping us, Marie Pizella, PhD in molecular biology and biotechnology, and they have also brought somebody from Germany for us to have a look at some of the issues that we have experienced. But we can report at this point, for Brucella, we've closed the back order, so Brucella is working fine, troubleshooting, we've come up with solutions. For Signal, we've also closed the back order. The second and third batch has gone out this week. The Humpy Skin, we've also closed the back order. Putang, we've also released this week. And then we've also released Vepovon. We have also released Raspberry Fever Live. And we also have stock of Inact, Raspberry Fever, and we're going to release another batch in the next week or so. We've also released the stock of Typhoid Live. We do have still some challenges with BCMO and also with Chlamydia or Primusure. And those we hope to have solved in the next couple of weeks. And then just coming back to this slide, the R&D team we built up last year was also very responsible for integrating the capability and the competency into the production level. We have the researchers that we've appointed and built a very strong R&D team with a number of PhDs, the masters, and so they've also been helped troubleshoot some of the problems we've had. In the previous year, we've upgraded the field right now with product packaging section. I think some of the members did see that when they visited OBC. the workshop some new core values for staff, because if we don't move to GMB, there is a certain type of culture we have to develop to make sure that we can work within a GMP environment. We also launched what we call Fruitful Red Social Entertainment, our Green 2020 launch for staff. We did that after the launch, but before the launch of the NEC, so we're in the process of all the changing that they experience in the city. And then we participated in the formulation of the Agricultural Policy Plan, APAP, which is project managed by GAP. And in it, we also put two issues that we have negotiated with GAP, and we have DG and CFO support. The one issue is the cross-subsidization of the unprofitable vaccine, what we call the orphan vaccine, because we sell vaccines and those that we make a profit out of, we use that money to cross-subsidize the one that nobody else will manufacture. So through cash and through strategy, we're hoping to see in November a patient that has been supported, there is an allocation going forward. In addition to that, we also made the presentation to Treasury with respect to funding our smallholder farmers. There's a project that's going to link up with the ARC project KYD, where we will provide specific vaccine packs and also some chemicals to the farmers. And that we also present through that which has voted to Treasury, so we're also waiting to see if that's going to come about in November. And at the end of this slide, we've also managed to bring Treasury to OBP. They went through our corporate plan list and wanted to see everything we bought and keep up in terms of our expenditure for last year. We spent about 76 million of the 90 million rand. In actual fact, at the end of this year, we will have spent all money earmarked for upgrading the current facility. Then we have now going to the board proposal to build a smaller new factory right next door. So we've currently gone through the tender process to appoint a professional team, your architectural, your quantity surveyors, and so forth. So we're hoping to keep soil on the 1st of August next year for the new factory. But that won't actually compromise the current operations because we're really upgrading the current operations. And then we concluded during that financial year the issue of red and fever. I did a lot of marketing going to the farmers. I used a bit of budget to help us with that. So in conclusion, we invested in development of new vaccine. Our R&D team with funding from CIA money is trying very hard to get us to have some combination products. We are basically replacing physical equipment to maintain our manufacturing capacity for the existing factory. You must understand also, as we go along, we buy a new piece of equipment, we must take out the old equipment, put something in that stops processes and new machines, and then we have to recalibrate and reinvest the new processes. So all of that actually creates downtime and specific problems that we have to troubleshoot. We must close the structure. I keep on saying that we are actually fixing a running car. The car is running while we can't keep it. We can't stop it, the car is working. And then the emerging sector, we have multiple allocations to Treasury, and we're going to work through the provincial departments and to create rural vaccine distribution opportunities and creating rural vaccine distribution as well. And then we have learnership and internship program. With GMP, we need to up the number of PhDs we have in the organization. We have one PhD, we now have two on the board and six other PhDs in the business. So we set myself a target that we need to have 3% of our workforce of PhDs. We have a learning and development program. We have a training budget, and that also increases because with GMP, and that's the last client, last part of this client. With GMP has three legs. The one leg is must improve the infrastructure, which we are doing currently. The second leg is must increase processes to optimize the efficient. And this is also something that we currently troubleshooting about. And the third leg is that you must train your staff. You must have qualified them. So that brings us to the end of this presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
and our members and colleagues. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Good morning, Chair and our members. And thank you very much for the opportunity. Chair, we present this morning the annual report of the African Veterinary Council. I am Mitsoko Nsabele, I am the President of the South African Veterinary Council, and I am here today with Dr. Clyde Maui, who is a member of the Executive Committee, and to my right is Ms. Ines Havinka, who is the Minister, who then is responsible for the day-to-day running of the Council. I'm going to go through the report, and I will give over to Ms. Havinka to present the financials. I also like to extend an apology on behalf of the Deputy President of the Vet Council, Dr. Yana Pretorius. But to will also three. Just to mention, Chair and honorable members, that our mission is very important in that as a statutory body, we have a precise responsibility, and that is to regulate the professional conduct of the veterinary and veterinary paraprofession. And we also set and monitor standards of education and practice for those professions. I think it's very important that we locate there for members to understand. Whenever I'm asked what do we do, I always say that we keep the register. In that we register people, or we register those that we find have conducted the things in a manner that we find unacceptable. Next slide, please. Our functions, honorable members, are performed in terms of our objective, which is to regulate the profession. We determine the minimum standard of commission or training for veterinarians, for veterinary technologists, for veterinary nurses, and also animal health technicians. We also exercise effective control over the conduct of members. So what it means is that if, for instance, we receive a complaint from a member of the public with regard to the behavior of one of our members, that gets channeled through one of our subcommittees, and the matter then gets handled in terms of a procedure. We also determine the standards of professional conduct against which we would then be able to review the matter that has been reported to us as a council. We encourage and promote efficiency and responsibility. Our profession remains very small, honorable chair and members, and it becomes our responsibility also as a profession to grow the profession and to publicize it to the general public in the country. We also protect the interests of the profession and we maintain and enhance the speech which has been given to the best profession. We think that the last point that we have, sorry, I'm on page 6. We advise the minister on letters directed to the profession. And herein, I think it's important to point out that, for instance, with regard to compulsory community service, that the department is to undertake, we become the first part in terms of ensuring that those veterinarians that are meant to serve under TCS have to go through a registration process, and we then determine how that gets implemented, and we enact that in terms of our relations as the council. Next slide, please. We believe that the veterinary profession contributes to food safety and security, and our goal is to ensure that we maintain relevance to the needs of the country and ensure that we modernize our legislation. And we want to use a tool of what we call the One Health concept. We believe the One Health concept is important in the sense that it has been mentioned, for instance, by authorities like the OIE and the World Health Organization, that 75% of diseases that are found in humans have their roots from animals. And we feel that
as a profession, we have an input to make in terms of the realization of the National Development Plan by ensuring that we improve public health by preventing what we call zoonotic conditions, which are diseases that are transmissible from animals to men. We also believe that through the realization of compulsory community service, we would be able to allow members of our profession to extend services that government renders to smallholder farmers. Chair, one of the biggest challenges that we have in terms of food safety and security in South Africa is that we still have problems with production within the smallholder sector, and we believe that the veterinarian should be able to provide those services to improve productivity of the smallholder farmers, but also that we need to support the development and training of veterinarians in aquaculture to support aquaculture development as well. We need to modernize our legislation and also to improve our core functions as veterinary functions. Next slide. So we also want to bring those strong linkages with the department in the sense that the view of the International Animal Health Organization that veterinary services in a country, not only the state veterinary services itself, but also the linkage between private veterinarians and state veterinarians. And this linkage is important in terms of the recognition of diseases that are primarily seen by private vets, and then working in tandem with their colleagues to be able to minimize the impact of those diseases by reporting to state veterinary services. So we believe that it's very key that a stronger relationship is built between the private and state veterinarians to ensure that the national veterinary services of South Africa is enhanced. I've already alluded, Honourable Chair Member, to a stronger relationship towards CTS and also the regulation of veterinary medicine, which are jointly regulated through DAF and through the Department of Health. We also want to enhance our relationship with Department of Health and Department of Rural Development. This is to ensure also that being a country with food security challenges, we believe that there's a hidden resource that is not yet mobilized in the country through the harvesting of game meat for consumption. And we believe that that meat could be used to supplement protein in the African food system. Next slide, please. We also want to unify the profession. I've mentioned earlier that we have veterinarians and we have a group of professions that are clubbed together and we call them veterinary paraprofessions. One of the things that we have is that the limited utilization of paraprofessionals, particularly in the state environment where animal health technicians are employed and in certain areas where veterinary technologists and veterinary nurses, we believe that there need to expand the role so that we can increase the reach to support smallholder farmers. We also want to market the value of the veterinary profession so that we can increase the uptake of matriculants into the veterinary profession. In fact, we have, I believe, successfully met with staff, and sometimes in this week there's been advertisements on radio on how this profession, sorry, radio and TV, on how this profession contributes to food safety and security. We believe it's a central theme for the existence of this profession. Next slide. So we are also a self-funding entity, and we tax our members, if I can use the phrase, and already indications are that we have overtaxed them too much, and now we need to be looking at alternative sources of income. And also one of the key things is to try and identify and improve internal efficiency in terms of how we coordinate our work. And I'm glad to say that we have this year used technology in that we are holding some of our meetings electronically, so we have meetings on Skype and by phone so that we reduce the charges that members of council submit to the organization. Next slide.
We are also proud to announce that we have acquired a new home for the profession. We have acquired a place at 26 Victoria Lake Street on the way to the airport. And we previously had a small place in Acadia, and with our strategy of from 2012 to 2014, we had grown the administrative support that council has, and with that we needed to find a new home where people can be able to work effectively and efficiently, and hence the need to acquire the new premises, but also to improve the prestige of the profession and in our image. Next slide. We've had a number of significant developments and events, one of which is through the NEMBA regulations, the Department of Environmental Affairs came up with what are called TOPS regulations, Residential Protected Species regulations, which required prior to the handling of the species. Dino is a typical example of the TOPS species. And their requirement is that prior to handling that species, a veterinarian needs to have a permit. We feel that it is unfamiliar in the sense that it is regulating veterinary profession. A typical example that I can give you is that if I'm riding from here today and there's rhino in transit and there's a problem and a vet has to intervene, that would be illegal in that the vet would not have acquired a permit before they assist in that emergency. And we believe that that is unfamiliar by the Department of Environmental. We've had a number of discussions with DEA. We've written a number of letters, and we have most recently had a meeting with Minister Guano, where we raised this issue and asked for his intervention with DEA. Next slide, sir. Another development that we've had in, that comes from previous council is that we've amended one of our rules, which we refer to as the Rule 12, which makes veterinarians end users of highly scheduled medicines. This issue is also related to the rhino poaching issue, in that it is those drugs that are used to immobilize rhinos. And we have come up with an amendment to this rule to ensure that veterinarians take responsibility for every meal of those products ready to use. That way, as a countermeasure to prevent access legally by other people. And we have had trouble with the wild rage in South Africa, who insist that we are wrong that way and that they would like to have access, and mainly attributed to the shortage of veterinarians in countries. And we have indications that the matter would probably be had in much greater of sensitivity. Next slide. Another development that we've had is with regard to the Competition Commission. Council used to set a tariff of fees that vets could charge. It was mainly a guideline. It was found to be anti-competitive behavior on the part of the Health and Veterinary Council. A bit of background is that prior to the tariff, council had approached the Competition Commission requesting guidance as to whether that would be allowed. And their opinion then was that it is okay, but they have subsequently changed their opinion. And certainly they are not taking responsibility for their opinion. But if they are allowed to change their mind, it appears. But be that as it may, the matter has subsequently been concluded on the 20th of August this year. This matter has been put to rest. That we have admitted that we were running a cartel, because that's how we accepted that council ran a cartel in terms of getting credit. And therefore, we have reached a settlement. Fortunately for us, it came at no cost. Typically, the Competition Commission charges 10% of your revenue for such findings. What we have agreed to is that council will amend all rules and have that completed by March of 2015, that would be having a chance of being found to be uncompetitive. That includes advertising, housing, which we previously did not allow. Next slide. We've also agreed with the Competition Commission that we would go about educating members with regards to this new rule and how they were anti-competitive. And this morning I read the team somewhere here in the state found done about 11 of these. So today will be number 12, and hopefully we will be brought into compliance in terms of the requirement of the Competition Commission. Next slide. We just wanted to point out that the delay in the coming into act of the amended Veterinary and Paraveterinary Act pending the finalization of the CSAS regulation impedes some of the work of the council, in that we have anticipated to have an inspectorate, and because of that we are unable to put in place an inspectorate to look at how veterinarians use veterinary medicine and drugs in general. Next slide. It is our responsibility of monitoring colors of education. We've had a visitation to the University of Pretoria Faculty of Veterinary in 2013, and we have found that the courses offered for the training of veterinarians and for the training of veterinary nurses are compliant and meet council requirements. We've also made a decision that previously we used to recognize six British qualifications, and we have amended our stance that we will no longer allow automatic registration, but that we will acknowledge and accept those registrations, sorry, those qualifications based on the assessment of standards, which would mean that we have to conduct visitations of those. Next slide. Those are some of the policies that we use to ensure that we as council deliver our mandate. It's just a listing. The next slide, that is. Chair and honorable members, we just wanted to highlight there that we only have 5,194 veterinary and veterinary paraprofessionals registered, and that we have allowed 425 persons authorized who might have not met fully the requirements to register fully as veterinarians or paraveterinarians. Next slide. The next slide is showing a template that shows the growth in the number of different professions. We've got at least an increase made in most of the professions as indicated with the total there given. Next slide. The next slide shows the different registrations and the move out in the calendar year. And I think we can skip the rest, and then I can give over to the registrar. Thank you.
Summary, please. We have a good financial footing. We only received our funds from the veterans and the veteran data position. We have since March, 31 March 2014, sold our main non-current fixed assets and have asked Dr. Sovelike to acquire the new building, but we are also able to fund a mortgage bond. And that concludes it. By the sheet there, you can see that we have good financial footing.
Some members just took the list of council members, and the next slide will be showing our administrative staff. Thank you.
Thank you. And the registrar, the president, and the registrar. Thank you very much for the discussion. We are going to allow the MC to report the review questions.
In the meantime, thank you.
I will ask Dr. Matavela to respond to the first question, which was about but why is it not possible for the ARC to collaborate with IDC and AMC, who are already implementing some aspects of laptop improvement programs, and to also indicate how assistance or communal farmers access animal health service in general. Dr. Matavela, please.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, fellow colleagues from OBP, GAP, and AFC, and of course, Council of the AFC. We do work hand in glove with IDC and the National Agricultural Marketing Council. They just have a mandate that is different to ours. We do supply the R&D know-how to the IDC and the National Agricultural Marketing Council for the reintroduction of the woolly animal.
Sorry, sir. Can you also read the question and answer? What to do must know where you are. Because it's not the question that's been raised by the current member.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The question is that given the budget constraints that the ARC expressed in terms of being able to roll out Ghana budget at home more aggressively, why is it not possible for the Council to collaborate with IDC and the National Agricultural Marketing Council, who are already implementing some aspects of the livestock improvement program? Then my response is that we are working hand in glove with the IDC and the National Agricultural Marketing Council. We are supplying them with the R&D know-how that underpins the Nguni reintroduction program, which is part of their livestock improvement program, together with the provinces. It's just that our mandates are different. The National Agricultural Marketing Council has got its mandate in the IDC, but certainly the service delivery and the R&D underpinning the rollout of their program are supplied by the ERC. The next question is, how subsistence and communal farmers access animal health services. The response is that animal health services is really the competence of the provinces and the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. Having said that, though, we do work hand in glove with them as well, in that we help them with their diagnostic work and some surveillance work, which makes it possible for them to deliver effective animal health services. That's enough for there for now.
Chair, the next question was in terms of training the Agricultural Research Council might indicate how farmers or cooperatives are identified. The ARC reports that no farmers were trained in the Oko province 919 and Karatu development. The portfolio committee made details of the failure to support in training farmers in this province. Moreover, the ARC must indicate its relationship with other sectors, particularly given the training of trained officers as well as enhancing the curriculum level. In the first instance, we work with various provinces in understanding what conferences are existing in those areas. And we also work with the Department of Trade and Industry. In this particular instance, the Small Enterprise Development Agency to find any sense of which cooperative would be interested in the technology that the ARC assigned to license or to them out there. Say it is not correct that there were no farmer trained in the Limpopo province. In fact, just as that I and the particular line item where we established that plant-wise plant clinic in program in the Limpopo province. So I'm not sure why the other part of the question was the ARC must indicate its relationship with AgriSita. The ARC is accredited by the AgriSita. We provide training at MP of level 1 and we host quite a number of interns. That is of work integrated learning that are coming from the AgriSita. The third question, I will request Dr. Gina to respond.
The question is, anything that indicates to the portfolio committee the reasons for fluctuation in terms of the research output, bracket journal articles of the entity. Moreover, this entity must indicate the conversion ratio of research output into technological innovations that are IP registered, and how much of that has contributed to the income generation stream of the entity. Be specific and give figures. If I take the first part of the question in relation to the fluctuation in terms of the research output, if you look at that graph, the graph is was at a blip in year 2012, where we had more research output while all the other years within the steady growth. That increase in year 2012 was when the country was celebrating 100 years of biological control, and there was a special edition of journals. And in that special edition, the ARC is the leading biocontrol research organization, published the majority of those articles. And therefore, there was a blip in the increased output in that particular year. In terms of the conversion ratio of research output in technological innovation, the ARC's major IP registered is in the form of plant breeding rights. And on average, over the last 5 years, we have registered about 20 plant breeders' rights per year, 108 in the last 5 years. In terms of that, we released almost all of those. In the last year, we released 30 of the plant breeders, of those varieties into the industry. However, the majority of the ARC's research output is in the form of solutions for production systems, crop protection, and all of those is released into the industry through the publication, but also through reports to the different commodity organizations. And it's those outputs in production systems and protection that allows the industry to both be able to improve its productivity. In terms of the income generation, we last year had royalty income of 8.22 million rand, which was an increase from 6.3 million rand in the previous year.
The next question states that the entity must indicate its comprehensive plan regarding the incorporation of Nyaka Farm into ARC. This being in relation to the planned activities, services, program to be rolled out at Nyaka Farm. Just briefly, Chair, the ARC while ago took a decision as part and parcel of a strategic plan to and run out what we are calling agriculture development center. So one of the key initiatives was to renovate what used to be known as the Pineapple Research Center in East London, Mthiza Research Farm, which we have done some of the renovations to the big facility. We could only afford a limited amount of the renovations given the resources that we had. There, the focus is to to do some agro-processing and some crop production projects, but also to provide training in that particular area. And we've already started one of the projects within there, within that particular facility. On the livestock, we were looking at finding a home for ourselves with the DFC, where we could provide the services such as the delivering at our facility home for livestock. So the discussion with the department of NEPA came at a very opportune time for us. And our intention is to work with the employees that are based at NEPA and incorporate them into our livestock development program, livestock improvement program, so that we can be able to consolidate and deliver the animal improvement services or research in that particular area, as well as expert advice. And I think Gauna Paredo Home would be the primary project that actually would be the third one implemented. We would also be linking that with our ability to provide, where necessary, expert citizens and expert advice on animal health. And, you know, as a farmer, you need to have a proper understanding on the health status of your livestock and how to support different types of illnesses and diseases among your animals. And that, I believe, would be part and parcel of what we do. Delivering a family services. This is still in initial stages. We still have to sit down with the department at the point at which we would enter into a formal agreement, including the resources that would be required for us to be able to do all of this. But this would be a new mandate be presented to the ARC. And once that comes through, we will be able to give you a much more detailed response that is actually linked in actual financials and resources and so on. We have, in the interim, visited NEPA several times to establish the state of affairs in terms of the infrastructure, the number of people that are working there, their conditions of employment and so on. And we are hoping that the department would, where there are problems, they sort those out long before these are transferred to the AFC. The next question was the chair. Let me render my apology on behalf of the Agriculture Research Council on the confusion around some of the slides that we're missing. We hope this will not happen the next time. But please bear in mind that we send this presentation electronically, and we don't print them out, so we don't, the portfolio, so we don't know sometimes in the handling what happens. The next question is, what is the vacancy rate of agriculture research council, particularly within research core, critical trust, and gut field? I believe some of this is listed in the annual report, Ms. Ula would give you a picture of that. For the year under review chair that we're reporting, we had planned to have somewhere about 3,285 total staff. We ended up with about 2,937, which meant that at the end of the year we had about 248 vacancies. You need to keep in mind that during the course of the year, some people come in and some people resign that you might already have in your organization. So that translates into a vacancy rate of about 8.3%. There was a follow-up on the first question around training of not grain farmers trained in Limpopo. There were some grain farmers from Limpopo that were trained, but not necessarily in the slide that was in the high class. Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The
next set of questions was, what was the main reason for the increase in the parliamentary grant or in the income of the AFC? Much of that was mostly from the economic competitiveness support packages,
that the National Treasury had allocated to the ARC. The next question says the auditor general has received findings on misstatement of disposal items, property, plant and equipment. What are you doing to fix it? Do you have the capital to maintain your property? I will ask the CFO to respond to that.
In terms of the findings on the business of what we have is that the challenges that we had mainly around the capacity of the county department, which is the implementation of people, the pipeline of people that can make sure that the salary of the county department is going to be done. In terms of capital to maintain our property, you will see that the allocation we get on annual basis is about 8 million. The analysis that we did about 5 years ago was such that the ARC needed over 150 million annually to ensure that it will address the federal in terms of infrastructure trade. So, we are still, the direct answer is that we are not really having the sufficient capacity to maintain our assets. Because the pillar of the block and the pillar of the control. So we're supposed to be spending at least over $8 million in maintenance on an annual basis. Our current expenditure is about $50 million. So we basically have to choose what we need to fix in a year, on a year-to-year basis. So we are definitely not at the level we should be.
If I may add on that, we are spending per annum about 17 million on security checks. This is money we better spend on other cases or on research. Some of the increases that have come through in terms of the cost of operations of the ARC, including security costs, we've gone from about 15 million to about more than 30 million per annum on electricity. We are looking at savings, we are looking at the alternative for energies. We've got a project at the moment. The CFO has just corrected me to say that our electricity cost for the year under review was about 50 million, which actually has gone up from 90 million in 2005-06 to 50 million, which is a major increase, which has a major impact on the operations of the ARC. The next question was on risk mapping. Vaccines of livestock can be scheduled according to the zones, as I indicated. What happens if the vaccines are not available at the time of vaccination? That's a difficult one. I mean, if they are not available, you can't vaccinate. However, I think the important point about this particular study on risk mapping is that it helps people to do the right planning and to go and look for the right kind of vaccine so that they can do that particular vaccination at the right time. And that's the important point about that particular risk mapping research. The next question is on climate change, water shortage, and high temperatures will have potential negative effects on food security. What plans are in place to prepare farmers for this? If you recall, we gave a presentation that showing the change of shift in rainfall in different parts of the country that are projected over the next 7 years. I believe this is information that is useful for policymakers to be able to put together the right kinds of plans that will enable South Africa and the sector to be able to weather the adverse impacts of climate change. One of the things that we are engaging in, that we've been involved in as the ARC, is a research project together with our partners in 5 other countries, which are in Southern Africa, that's Uganda, Malawi, Tanzania, Mozambique,
where we've been developing a drought-tolerance maize cultivar, particularly targeted for smallholder farmers. And we're hoping to release that cultivar sometime very soon. Once the authorities have granted us planted that drive. We've done the research, we've demonstrated that it works, we've bought the product. We've got now the authorities to give us the planted advice, and then we can be able to use the house in the contract to the The next question was that we need information in writing about this. We must see if we get value for our friends. Secondly, once we've concluded the insect analysis study, we will be able to provide those particular reports to the committee. I believe those are all the questions that were raised to the ARC. Thank you.
Off the mic. Thank you very much, on that report, do you have questions?
Thank you, Chairperson. I have two questions. I'm not sure if Saint Eric Augustine behind it. They are three questions. Can I start with the first question? So what access do small scale farmers have to your services and products, and at what cost, if any? The problem that we have currently is that our income stream is mainly from commercial white farmers coming from through the co-op. And we sell about 70 million rands of vaccine through that channel. To small-scale farmers, we sell less than a million rands. And the reason for that is that in most instances, smallholder farmers don't have cash available to pay for our vaccine. And hence, we propose this project to link up with KYD through the department, provide vaccines and pharmaceutical packs over a two-year period, so that the farmers can have those products as a subsidy, but to also supplement it within the KYD project with training, and also to make sure, because KYD also takes care of reproductive efficiency, so that there are offspring which can be sold, and those farmers can then, with the selling of cattle, be able to then pay for OBD vaccine. Now, if this project proposal is successful, it means that the farmers will be getting a two-year support from us for the three subsidies as far as vaccines are concerned, and then hopefully at the end of that, the farmers will then be loyal to OBP, but we will also continue the service of supporting them. Now, this is in our interest, because currently, as I said, most of our income comes from commercial white farmers through co-op. And we see our future growth of smallholder farms going forward over the next 10 years. And we also see our future growth in terms of exports of vaccines. And those two areas we need to grow. Another complicating factor is that we do sell vaccines to provincial departments. And we've calculated that provinces, just for vaccines, spend about 60 million rand a year. And they only buy 2 million rand worth from OBP. And the minister has taken this up himself to address the issue of each one of the premiers to say, why are you not supporting your state-owned entity? Because they then obviously buy the vaccine from the multinational companies. The second question, and it's going to, in a sense, link to the one that I just discussed, it is, the entity has mentioned the assistance in terms of personnel from Bayer and the consultants. However, the entity must engage with the PC plan in terms of maintaining production efficiencies, even though the refurbishment project. It is also important that the entity has continued to lose its market share, allowing the same amount of time, but obviously it's not able to provide the assistance as and when required, and that's not reliable. Now, granted, with the upgrade, there have been some challenges. We have come towards the end of this year, with upgrading the existing facility. We have to buy certain bits of equipment for the existing facility. But we have done some analysis and found that the money that we got from Treasury can actually be sufficient for a separate facility next door to the existing facility. And that means, as I said, we've appointed a professional team, and that is totally apart from the current production issues. So that will be started in August next year to build a separate facility. So when that facility starts being built, it will not impact on what we are currently doing. That facility's aim is to bring us to GMP. Now, good manufacturing practice, if we achieve good manufacturing practice, it means we won't have these production problems. Because in GMP, you will talk on, first of all, the infrastructure, which Treasury is helping us with. Secondly, the processes, which are currently troubleshooting with the current support from consultants and data, and even myself, I'm going right on hands down, sitting with troubleshooting committees to make sure that each process is working efficiently and what are the problems. We have defined currently where is our problem in terms of why we're having difficulties. And then thirdly, the personnel need to be trained in terms of GMP. And we are confident that going forward, having now identified where the problems lie, we will be able to have more consistency in the current facility. But if the new facility comes on track, that will even be better. And apparently, it's going to take about 2 years to build that facility. If we keep the soil in August, and then 2 years later, we will probably have the new facility. Then we have another list of five questions from Mr. Stan. It says, we saw you a year ago and asked what plans will you put in place to ensure that inspections are not stopped without building the facility. And what you did have a problem, what was the main reason for it? Now, since July, we have had some stoppage in our production processes, and I personally take charge in terms of sorting out what those issues are. What we have discovered is, and it becomes very technical, because we could use our viral vaccine in what they call roller bottles. And I think some of the members did visit us in the previous portfolio committee. But again, I want to extend an invitation to this portfolio committee to visit us. We have on Wednesday the portfolio committee from public enterprises and communications visiting us. Because if you see what we do, it becomes easier to understand. We produce vaccines in roller bottles, where we those cells on the surface of the inside of the bottle, and those cells then when they have reached optimal growth, we add an antigen to them, which is basically your virus, and then those cells then get infected and they produce more viruses, and those particles are then harvested and it becomes your vaccine. That's what you're going to then inject into the animal. Now, in that process, we discovered there are some problems, especially with the antigens, but also with the cells. Because if you change your cell lines and bring in new cells, you will have problems. And in getting up some of the new production equipment and new processes, we have to change some of the cells, and in changing some of those cells, there's a process that you have to go through where you have to do what they call kinetics, see which antigen is suitable for which cell, and this is where we've now located the problem and we're dealing with that issue. So those are the reasons concurrently for production problems. We solve some of those issues. Then we also have a GMP concept that staff needs to follow SOPs, standard operating procedures. And there should be no deviation, you must always follow those procedures. and there should be some mechanisms to monitor staff to make sure they follow those mechanisms. We've also found in Israel with some difficulties with staff having been following that, and we've corrected that. Are you aware that other vaccine manufacturing companies are opening up in SA and Namibia? What will be the impact on your entity? Currently, there are other vaccine manufacturing entities opening in Southern Hemisphere, in South Africa. Currently, there are 20 players. So, it seems there will be probably 22 players. It is a threat, obviously. We do have some vaccines that are quite unique to OBC, which those companies don't have. And what will also be important is the support that we get from government for the unprofitable vaccines. Now, the unprofitable vaccines are cross-subsidized from our profitable vaccines. And none of those companies manufacture unprofitable vaccines because they have the choice to decide I'm not making their vaccines unprofitable. But we as a state-owned entity, we have to manufacture those vaccines. And hence we have addressed the issue through the Department of Administration. Now, obviously when we have the GMP facility, then we can then certify the production of some of the lines of specific vaccines in the new facility. And in the new facility, we build bigger and better, we're introducing bigger and better equipment and processes, so that our size in terms of batch size has increased, but our efficiency has increased, so we're hoping that to produce efficiently much more vaccine. We don't foresee any severe impact with more entrants coming into the market. There's already changes, so that between two, we are still number three in volumes produced. We are not number three in terms of money generated. We are number 14 in terms of money generated. That's because we don't have combination vaccines. We have single dose vaccines, and single dose vaccines means that you actually produce more, but you charge less. And a multi-dose vaccine can charge more. So we're also doing R&D to bring multi-dose vaccines to the market. Sales of vaccines went down, this is another question, last year. The fact that you did not have all the vaccines all the time, did it have an influence on the increase? Did it have an influence, and I don't understand this question, but as the vaccine sales did go down, it is also a challenge because we don't have vaccines all the time available. Did it have an influence and the increase? I don't understand that question.
What is the impact on the check? I think you have answered that. When it seems to, I think the honourable member was saying that the sector was upgraded at the IT job, but I think you answered that as the opening, in your opening remarks.
We produce 53 vaccines. There are three or four vaccines that are uniquely OBP vaccines. Any of the other vaccines are obtainable from the other multi, other 20 companies operating in the market. Now, we did at one stage own about 90% of the market share. That was pre-94 and pre-96, when the market became deregulated. More companies came into this the sphere. So our market share did decrease. But also remembering that we've never had money invested in the country to upgrade the company. So we've been manufacturing vaccines with equipment that's made in 1968 and 1972. And about a year ago, I think government recognized this problem and put in some money to upgrade the facility. Now, any upgrade is not easy. I've actually looked at references and articles for upgrades that have been done in Canada, the U.S., and various other places. An upgrade of vaccine facility takes anything between 6 and 10 years. It's not an easy process, especially if you still produce vaccine at the same time. If you are just building a separate facility, it makes it quite easy because you're just building a facility and you're putting equipment in and process it, so you're not worried about the current production. So we have actively, personally, I'm working.
Can I request that summarize?
Okay, thanks. Just two more questions. What is the impact on the industry if action is not available when needed? Obviously, the industry will go to other companies, except for those vaccines that we officially declare as well. What impact is the non-availability of vaccines have on your partner, Bayer? Sales of a month, I'm informed that they work on a commission basis. Yes, they also, obviously, are distributors. They distribute only to commercial entities and the community co-ops. We supply government and we supply smallholder farmers and we do the marketing internationally. So they also had a drop in sales, obviously, because of the unavailability of vaccines. Thank you very much.
Extending invitation to all the entities when we have a strategic plan. You would be given time to join your remain your mission, your wishes, and we don't want you to use here to say that we don't take you seriously. We take you very seriously. Unfortunately, our members are living here with my book, will end up with the check and we have a problem. Do you have any questions that have been asked from you,
sir? Yeah, thanks. Thank you very much. And thanks for the invitation. I think we'll try and coordinate with the register in your office so that we find the contribution and members of the committee. Yes, we did receive questions here. We received six questions. I will try and group them as far as I can. The first question that we received says, did you receive the OIE report and are you meeting with staff to look at recommendations and programs frequently say? And the answer to that is that yes, we did receive the OIE report and have attended meetings with staff that were going through the report, but also the staff had subsequently invited the OIE itself to do a follow-up exercise with that as the gap analysis, which is trying to distill what were the gaps and sort of determine the investment that South Africa would need to do in terms of bringing revenue services up to par. The second question is, I have been informed that VET look at data reports on communicable diseases. We are under-reporting on diseases. Would you say this is happening? It's not a straightforward answer. I think there's reporting requirements in South Africa in terms of legislation, which is the MRD Diseases Act, and that it determines that certain diseases are referred as reportable diseases, and therefore, by law, all and sundry should report when they come into contact with those diseases. The second part of the answer has to do with our obligation in terms of being a member of the OIE, and the requirements for certain diseases which are used to be referred to as this A and B, but those are diseases that generally have trade implications. And our understanding is that all those two requirements are in there. Perhaps one could mention that maybe there's a need, given our intention to improve livestock production and enhance our ability to feed South Africans and improve food safety, that maybe there's a need to look at certain types of diseases which impact on production and which are not ordinarily reported, and perhaps that's maybe where education needs to be had between that and the rest of the profession in terms of how do we manage those diseases. We generally refer to them as erosion diseases in that they erode the ability of animals to become more productive. The next question has to do with compulsory community service. I try to read all of them and try and answer them and my
what is the reason for the delay in the finalization of the compulsory community service regulation? The second one says that SNDC must indicate its position and understanding on the rollout of CPS, given that it was meant to commence in 2015. What are your views in the development or lack thereof in terms of the preparedness of staff? Is the council ready in terms of registering students on the database and developing the guidelines in terms of required resources, infrastructure, equipment, etc. in view of 2015? And the answer goes as follows. The council was involved with the department throughout the conceptual phase of CCS, which included amendments to the principal legislation, the veterinary and paraveterinary act, which found the disease. And with that process, the former register of council was involved and consulted with the department, ensuring that all start working tandem to ensure that when CDS comes into being, that all the dots all the I's have been dotted and the T's crossed, so to speak. And there were consultations with state law advisor. So the current problem with that gap basis is with regard to the state law advisors themselves changing their opinion. When the act was amended, they indicated that certain provisions can be left in regulation and not in the principal act. And now they have another group of advisors that say, no, you cannot make provisions in regulations which cannot be which has not been provided for in principal legislation. So therefore you are serving powers that you don't necessarily have. So we are well through that in terms of what are the issues. Perhaps the issue is finding a resolution to ensure that CCS can begin. And we think that maybe the state law advice must be allowed or must be forced to make up its mind and have one opinion and not several opinions. Secondly, Council, we're perhaps we have a bit of a gap with the department that we have said that in order to improve our general preparedness, that there be a forum jointly between that, the department and other stakeholders, wherein there could be a mechanism of resolving problems as they arise. And I think that's where we think there's a gap that could be resolved. The last question I will give to my colleague here, Dr. Munster, for you.
Thank you, Mr. The question that I'll address is what impact does the non-availability of vaccines at critical times have on the animal health population? I'm a private practitioner in Eastern Sea State, so you can tell from where I come because I'm at the face of a hard rock level of all these shortage of vaccines. And my only answer can be devastating. First of all, there is a biological product that has to be available at critical times of the production of animals and the life cycle of those animals is when you need it. So that's the first issue I'd like to address. And the second issue is the actual impact on the health and disease spread within South Africa. And the third issue that I'd like to indicate is the economic impact that has on both the farming communities and on the national income of this of South Africa. If we have a look at the non-availability, then one can look at diseases, the way the diseases spread within the Free States. We're having a huge spread of brucellosis right in the state. Many farms are becoming positive for brucellosis, and a lot of this can be related back to the non-availability of the strain 19 vaccine, which farmers are used to use, and that really vaccinated. Once the animal gets past the age of 8 months, you cannot use this vaccine and you have to use other commercial available vaccines, which are extremely expensive. So that is a factor that has been looked at. We've heard also that there's been a shutdown of the viral section of the production of vaccines for viruses. This has had a huge impact, and that's going to pay out in the next couple of months. We did not have the availability, we did not have bluestone vaccine available when the animals had to be vaccinated. Breeding programs have started, a vaccine has been made available right now, but it takes 6 to 9 weeks to go through the vaccination program. So those animals are actually now susceptible to any form of bluestone. I think we are going to see a huge impact within the next couple of months, especially if we do start getting having a rainy season. And the same goes for Rift Valley fever, and the same goes for 3 days to exist, and I can continue to name them all along. The credibility of the vaccine OVP has gone out of the window. No provision was made, no holding up of stock for the closing down of this facility, and why close the facility at this critical time when these vaccinations are needed? It could be closed down at other times. So it has had a huge impact, and I'd like to say that we need a better planning. We know what has been said, we know what has been said, because year after year there is some of the vaccines that are always not available. I hope with the new development that's taken place that this will be addressed. But in a nutshell, this is a disaster for agriculture and animal, especially in animal farming in South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you,
sir.
Thank you very much. It has been a marathon of presentation and questions. And I want to take the opportunity to thank everybody for coming. But just to say that as a committee, we have noted that you have unqualified reports, but they are mental offenses. Like on the floor with the physical objective, which needs to be corrected for once again. Actually, this year is the year we are not supposed to have unqualified. If you still remember the pronouncement of the president, 2014 is the year of the Lord. So I hope 2014 is the end of 2014, which will then be 2015. Thank you very much for the meeting with us. Thank you.